Station number 14885.
Hey, what? Mr. Alistair too. You were just telling me what you saw in the first action.
Yes, we just went straight through and we got told to go towards the Falaise Gap. And we just have to wait until further orders. And then we went up to this particular spot where they were held up and set the place afire. And they didn't stop in long, they were soon out. And so the infantry then could get forward. We was also called up when the artillery bombarded a place, and it was too dangerous because the infantry was too near to it to keep on bombarding it because they thought they'd hit their own lads. So they sent us up and stopped the bombardment by the artillery and let us sort it out with our own 75mm guns plus the flamethrower. Let the infantry get forward.
Were you operating with Canadian troops then?
Canadian troops, Polish troops. It was pulled from one side of the other, where whatever regiment or whatever detachment wanted us, we was told to go there, you see. We wasn't just as a normal group just going forward on the doing a certain job. They was pulled from one side to the other side according to where they wanted flamethrowers.
What were the Canadians and Poles like to
Very
work with?
good. Very good. I was even attached to the Americans, and what they didn't get, I don't know. They had more stuff to eat. We used to be giving them tins of corned beef and what we call haricot oxtail, kind of a stew that we got in as compote packs. We used to be swapping it to them for tins of chicken, tins of ham, giving us bags of cigarettes. And I didn't smoke at the time, but everybody else smoked in the tank, so you just smoked because you had nothing else to do. Well, you was going in, just carry on smoking, and that was it.
How did the enemy perform in Normandy, the Germans?
Well, I think there was very, very stubborn at the beginning, but as we went past Falaise Gap, that was one of the worst places it was at the beginning. In Falaise itself, there was thousands of cattle, and all with shrapnel and bombs were being dropped and had been killed. And when I'd never known this, but when cattle get killed, they just lay down sideways like anybody else. But all of a sudden, they start swelling up, and all you see is four legs stuck up in air. They go onto the back, they stick up like that. And if they swell up that much, that the stomach bursts, and the stench is terrible. So in the main streets of the Falaise, we had to get out of the tank, put chains around their legs, pull them to the side so other transport could get through, and then set them a light to burn the smell away. We're all there with handkerchiefs soaked in water tied around his nose and his mouth to stop the stench getting into you. It was one of the worst smelling places I've ever known, apart from Germany, where there were these other displaced persons camp where a lot of them was shoved into graves there.
Did you land actually on D-Day?
On D-Day, yeah.
But what happened to you between D-Day and the Falaise Gap?
As I was saying, between D-Day and the Falaise Gap, we didn't know where the hell we was. We were just here, as far as I was concerned. We were just in another country. We wasn't told anything. You just got out and you was in a field. You just got out and you was in a village. We weren't told anything at all.
Did you have much contact with French civilians?
Very little. Very little contact. Only in Le Havre. And Caen, because we went through there, you see, more or less after we'd done the cross channel gun, we went through there and they were just jumping up and shouting and everything else,
Were
happy about it.
Were they all friendly? Or
all friendly, except for Le Havre.
What happened there?
Well, Le Havre, we didn't know this at the time, but Le Havre, when we'd gone in there, they got the wrong information or something. The French resistance mustn't have been in contact so good. And they'd been telling us all the Germans were in there and they couldn't do nothing about it. So they came over with the bombers and we went in, same as everybody else. And they pasted it to hell. But little did we know, all the Germans had come out and all we were doing was pasting the French people. And I don't think they forgive us for that when we went back to.
So what kind of a reception did you get in Le
Havre? Well, when we gone to other places, we always got good reception. When we went to Le Havre, yeah, there were just people hanging out at windows and they couldn't care less whether they were there or not. Couldn't care less.
What do you mean they couldn't care less?
Whether they... when I'm talking about when we went back after it all finished. They couldn't care less. They didn't want to know us in Le Havre.
Did they give you the cold shoulder?
That's correct, sir. The cold shoulder. It was we was to blame for all the French people getting killed.
Were there any other actions that you took part in Normandy apart from the Falaise Gap?
Yes. I've just forgot offhand.
Never mind if you can't remember. What about the losses in your unit in Normandy? Did you lose many tanks and personnel?
We lost quite a few personnel. A sheet is there which I give you. There must be over 60 in various graves up and down in Normandy, right up to the war finishing. And tanks, I should imagine that they must have lost 50.
What did the Germans use to knock out your tank?
They used 75mm guns, and they had Tiger tanks and Panther tanks, which was far more powerful than ours in performance of gunnery. As far as anything else, they were slower than Churchill tanks, and Churchill weren't fast. Churchill, if you could get 20 miles an hour out of them, that was flat. But the Tigers, well, they was a lot bigger tank, wider, but they had 17-pounders and 17mm guns on. They were twice as long as ours. Just have to let you hit us between the turret ring or anywhere, that were it.
Between the what?
The turret, on the turret ring, where the turret goes round, on top of the thing. That was a narrowest point. If it hit you there, that were it. This is why at the side of the tank, and at the front and the rear of the tank, we had what they call chocolate bars, just like a big bar, of, same shape as a bar of chocolate, and about 2 inch to 3 inch thick. On top of the ordinary armour to stop it, anything, what big bore shell, from going through the side of the tank and knocking the engine out, or going through the pannier doors.
What about Panther tanks?
Panther tanks, I've never seen one yet what was really knocked out. Not really. I've seen a lot what had been left, run out of petrol. I've never seen one being knocked out. And that was our only worry, was Tiger tanks and Panther tanks. There was more supreme than ours.
You haven't mentioned the 88mm gun.
Pardon?
You haven't mentioned the 88mm gun that the Germans had.
Yeah, well, they had that on the Tiger later on, but the first one. But the 88mm was out of this world. Really out of this world. It must have been hanging over the front of the tank by about 4 foot, 5 foot over the front of the tank, besides the length of the tank. Hell of a gun that was.
What did you feel about the enemy? Did you hate the enemy or respect him or what?
Well, later on, we hated him at first, but later on, there was only we come to think of him as they're only like us, doing what they've told. They've got some nutter ahead of the, such as Hitler there, ahead there, and it didn't matter what you did, you had to do it. If they didn't do it, they was like us. You had to do what you were told. Because otherwise, you might as well not be in the forces at all if you just do what, if you won't do what you're told. It's discipline, that's how I call it. Pardon?
Did you have confidence in the British government?
Yes. Definitely.
Now, when you broke out,
yeah.
You went to Le Havre and the Channel port.
Yes, right, yeah.
How did the Churchill stand up to the battering of these long journeys?
Very good indeed. It stood up very well indeed. We went all the way from landing right up to the end of the war. We only got on one transporter. All the rest went by the road, by tracks, by the tank.
Where did you have the transporter?
Well, if it was taken, we'll say, from one part of France, and they wanted you to go to other side of France, they'd pick you up by a tank transporter, because it'd take you too long to get there by a track, and take too much petrol and everything else, and you couldn't go by road, so they used to put you on a tank transporter, take you across to wherever you were needed, which unit you was going with, and drop you there. You did your job, and then they picked you up on another transporter, if it was far away to, like, the other side, and take you over and then transport it to the other side.
Did you ever get any German aircraft attacks on your tank?
Just two. And that was in Normandy. There was, stood outside around a field, edge of a field, and they were all camouflaged up. And there was a infantry platoon there, what had been come back after the lines, and we were resting, and they was resting, and this one came down, he just dived, and we all got out of the way, or we thought we did, and he must have lost control of the kite completely, and he went straight into this big thing, big army wagon, where there was infantry was cooking all the meals for the infantry. He took the wagon and everything away with him, boom. Killed loads of them there. He just went out of control completely. That just tried to dive down and couldn't pull up.
Was that the Canadians?
No, that was the British. British.
Do you remember which British infantry units?
No, sir.
Worked with?
No, because we just, as I said, nobody carried badges or ranks. They were just like people in the street. One was just like another. Only thing you knew, it was a unit, that's all, but you didn't. We had no badges on and had no ranks on or anything. You just had a denim suit on and that was it.
A denim suit?
Yes, well, that's a khaki, roughly, drilled like these lads wear today. It's denim stuff. And they were all khaki. And just, you used to have them on and your beret on. In the tank, or you had headphones on and a berry on in the tank, and that's all.
A blackberry?
Blackberry, sir, yeah. We had tin hats, but they never used them, only when we got out.
Why didn't you use a tin hat?
Well, you couldn't manage with headphones on and a tin hat inside, you see. That's why we had the berries on.
Do you remember going through Belgium?
Yes. We didn't do a lot in Belgium. We just went more or less through it because we stuck behind and it seemed to go in a rush until it got to a certain part of Holland and it stopped.
Where did you go to in Holland?
Nijmegen, It's a dog and bosh. And there was all round Nijmegen, Arnhem, Sir Toggenbosch, right up to the Rhine.
Whereabouts in the Netherlands did you have to fight?
We had to fight. We went in as the 53rd Welsh Division in Nijmegen. And then there was Tuckers, and we took control of Sir Toggenbosch with the 53rd Welsh Division.
Was this the liberation of Sir
Toggenbosch? Sir, liberation of Sir Toggenbosch.
What was that like?
That was a very good do in a way of speaking. It being cut off and Sir Toggenbosch is like an island in the centre of Holland. It's covered round. The only way you can get into Eindhoven, Sir Toggenbosch, is to go across a bridge. There's water all the way around it. That's the only way. Every entrance to get into Sir Toggenbosch, you have to go over water into a bridge. Like a river running all the way around it.
What did you find in the town?
Pardon?
What did you find in the town?
Well, when we first went, this is where we lost one of our tanks. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and they said we had to go in. And we went, and said, right, forward, over to that wood over there. Well, when we went to go over the wood, you had to climb up a big embankment over the railway lines, down the other side, and then it said, put your foot down, straight for that wood. And I put my foot down, straight for the wood, and then all of a sudden, boom, we just went nose down. And up to here in water. There were 3 bombs had dropped in one crater, and it was full of water, and they were all marshland. Well, that's where we lost the first tank. So we had to climb out of the front, still in the tank, climb through from the front of the tank, the driver and the co-driver. Driver and the co-driver had to scramble up into the turret, and the turret was wrong way around, as in a way of speaking. There's only one way you can get from the front of the tank into the turret. The turret has to be with a gun to the front. If it's any other way, there's all ammunition packed round side and you can't get through, you see. So they had to turn this turret by hand because all electric had gone off. It's an electric turret and a hand turret to move it. Well, they couldn't move it by electric. So the two of them had to wind this so just to get enough space for us to climb through into the turret. And then we all sat round on the turret ring. Everybody smoked, but nobody could have a smoke because there were cigs and matches floating all in the bloody water and none of us could have a smoke. So we had to wait about half an hour, sat in this tank, this turret in this water, waiting, looking, until one of the tanks had done its job down in the wood, turn around, come back. We had to jump out of the tank and get into their tank. So there were 10 in their tank then, and left it. Well, next day. Next day we went back with a recovery tank to pull it out. And the marsh and land round at Sir Toggenbosch there is that bad that as soon as they got there, the first thing they had to do was take that trailer off. It was, nobody had to see them trailers at all. They were still on the list of not to be touched or anything. And they disconnected the trailer, took the trailer away, and the tank had a 9-foot aerial on it. And after they went back in about 2 hours after, and all there was about a yard of aerial left, and that tank's still there now. One of my friends, what was the wireless operator, he has had the BBC over there trying to find this tank. They haven't found it yet. It's still down in the hole. Yeah.
What kind of reception did you get from the people in Sir Toggenbosch?
The best reception ever. Best reception you could have. You could either sleep in their beds. When they went forward and left us there, they could either sleep in their beds, and the folks would sleep downstairs on the floor. They'd give you all the grub they wanted and what they had and everything. And they're still like that today. It's the best it's the best place I know in Holland for hospitality or anything else. It's out of this world, and people there. And they go over, some of our lads go over every 12 months and stop with a Dutch family, three over there.
Was the town much damaged?
No, just various, not really, it was just outside by the bridges. A lot of bridges were blown up. And there were some factories around the side. When we first went, you see, when we got over, the next day when we went and got another tank, next day we went over. To get over to these, the infantry couldn't get across these bridges because there was a factory there, and it must have been full up of Germans with machine guns, and they were giving it hell. So all we did was some other, well, on one side of the river to the other, we set the place afire. So the infantry could get across into the Doggenbosch. And as soon as that happened, well, the more or less packed in.
Were the population much deprived of food and what they needed?
Yes, they were very, very deprived of food. Apart from, I'll say, bread and that sort of stuff like that. But other things, they had nothing. Tea, coffee and other stuff, meat. Deprived completely.
Were the soldiers able to give them anything?
Yeah. We had compo packs. We had big wooden boxes, compo packs, which they're supposed to be for 15 men. 15 men. And we had one and it lasted 3 days. It was five in the crew, you see. We split it up that way, five in the crew. Well, a lot of stuff what we had in was tin, as I said, tin corned beef and tin this and tin that, tin fruit and cigarettes in tins and everything. Well, they looked after us that good, that anything we had, we give them.
Any other places in the Netherlands you remember in particular?
No, not really. Apart from, as well as I said, the Doggenbosch and Nijmegen, Eindhoven.
What did you find in Arnhem when you got there?
Well, we were stuck on we were stuck on the road. When the airborne come over and dropped, we were stuck on the road outside of the bridge, waiting for them to drop. They came over, it was just like a, well, you couldn't see it. You couldn't see, no, but parachutes all over. It was just like a load of bees. You couldn't see a cloud in the sky for them. They were just dropping all over. And we stuck there because we couldn't get no farther on the main road. And then day after, we had to pull back because all the trouble, what there was, what everybody knows about Arnhem. But when we went into the Arnhem, a couple of days after, went into the woods, there was lads, airborne lads, who had been caught up in trees. And the Germans had set fire to the trees and strapped them round the trees and burnt the lads. They were just absolutely strapped round with wire ropes and all sorts round trees and put petrol to them and burnt them.
Were these British or?
British airborne troops. They were strapped round trees with wire ropes and must have been burnt to death.
How many of these did you see?
I would see roughly about 40.
Who had been burnt in that way?
Burnt in that way, yes.
Whereabouts was this?
In the woods at Arnhem. Where they got entangled in the trees and whatnot. And someone got through and then there were all the Germans in the woods. So they then went dropped through, they strapped into trees and just set them alight.
What do you remember after this?
Well, the next thing was over there at Rhine. crossing of the Rhine.
Can you describe what happened then? This was after the winter had passed.
Right? That's correct, yeah.
Where did you spend the winter?
In Sir Toggenbosch, the biggest part of the time in Sir Toggenbosch, and the woods outside of Sir Toggenbosch. And
what was the winter like?
Reichswald Forest. We was in Reichswald Forest for, I'd say 2 or 3 weeks. And it was that cold there that we used to get in this bivouac, which is like a tent at the side of the tank. Half a tent, we used to sleep there, and took his boots off and put them down on grass or on any part where we was sleeping. Next morning, when we got up, put his boots on, he had to hit it with a stone to get them off the floor. They were frozen to the floor, with the main hobnailed boots with studs in, and that heavy frost, they were frozen to the ground. We had to knock them off.
Did you fall sick in the winter?
Sick? No, sir. No. 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 We seem to do very well health-wise over there.
You were going to describe the Rhine crossing.
Yes. Well, the Rhine crossing, well, they've come, the bridge folks come up, the engineers, Royal Engineers, and they sat spanning some bridges over because some of them had been knocked down. Then the barges come in, the barges, and they took us over, tank over on barges.
Where was this?
I don't know exactly. All I know is when we went across the Rhine, they were more or less packing in the other side, Germany were packing in nearly. And as I say, it wasn't far. It can't have been far off of the airport, because that's where we finished up, in the airport.
This is at Hamburg?
Hamburg Airport. We finished up in Hamburg Airport, and this would be about, only about a fortnight after.
Were you still with 53, Dave?
We left England with 53, Dave. We went with them all the way, and every time we went with them all the time, until they wanted attachments somewhere else, and then we go back to 53rd, Dave. We always were the 53rd Welsh Division. Always. But if they wanted any tanks, flamethrowers, for any other purpose, they was in the 53rd Welsh Division, so whip us out and take them somewhere else, to some other unit. Then we returned to the 53rd Welsh Division.
How actually did the tanks get across the Rhine?
They put some, at first, there was some bridges what was nearly all, but somewhat could be repaired. So the Royal Engineers, they repaired them while all the shelling was going on. They repaired them and spanned another one at top of it to bridge the gap. And then it went over by there, bridge the gap.
Were you under fire as you went across?
No, we wasn't. No, they pulled back. No. No. As soon as we got across, it was more or less very, very quiet. It was nearly into what you might call the end of the war type, really. Very, very quiet.
So did you use your flamethrowers in Germany?
No. No, no.
What were the German citizens like towards you?
Well, I think the older type people,